early in the general conference, you were a speaker at a rally that was held as an offshoot of the Task Force on Immigration that related to for-profit prisons. Would you recount a little bit of your message to that gathering?
Well, our theme for that rally was Profit from Pain is Inhumane. And the rally focused on joining with folks in Florida and around the country, particularly, even though we did have a international reflections on the issues of immigration and incarceration. But the whole effort of mass incarceration, the continued growth of the prison population in the United States and other places around the world, we just think is contrary to who we are as Christians and United Methodists, particularly if we're committed to restorative justice and also to pathways for persons to become legal residents in this country. Over 60% of the persons who are incarcerated in the U.S. are persons of color, and these private prison companies, particularly the CCA and others, are literally appealing to governors and local states to allow them to take over prisons and build prisons if they would guarantee 90% occupancy for 20 years. So I wrote our governor in Iowa, Governor Branstad, and I think in 48 of the states, we got commitments from bishops and others to write the governor saying, we are not interested and we think it's immoral for our states to endorse these private prison initiatives when they are appealing for us to guarantee prison population. We think that our money, tax dollars, can be better spent if we focus on education, if we focus on restorative justice things that end up in shorter prison terms, and also direct our attention more to until we finally have a comprehensive immigration reform, stopping all of this detention of persons who've literally broken no laws at all, and are just fueling the for-profit prison industry.
Returning for a moment to the structural conversations that we had at the General Conference, there were many plans beforehand, even a plan generated by a group of people in the days immediately prior to the beginning of the General Conference. Part of the conversation was structural. Part of the conversation is setting a direction for the church. In the end, the structural revisions were ruled unconstitutional by the Judicial Council, but yet there's more to it, you suggest.
Well, I think some people celebrated that the structural, the proposed new structures did not pass and were found to be unconstitutional by the Judicial Council. But I think as a bishop of the church and a bishop in Iowa, I'm clear that the adaptive challenge facing the church has not changed. And that challenge is the focus that we focus and align our work and our witness towards vital congregations, more vital congregations, encouraging vitality in all of our existing congregations, reaching new people, new and different people, developing and raising younger leadership, and working with the poor. So that adaptive challenge has not changed. We did end up with basically the structure we currently have with smaller board size, which should translate into some savings of dollars that could be redirected to work in annual conferences. So I don't think we came out in a bad place, and there may in the next 4 years be another proposal that addresses board structure and agencies. At the end of the day, I think the proclamation of the gospel in word and in deed and in community are the bigger challenges that face us.
And with smaller boards, there are fewer assignments of bishops to each individual board. Do you see an impact on your own life and your own schedule by the board size restructuring?
Well, it had an immediate impact on me, at least for the moment. Things can change fairly quickly. But I just served for 1 year on the board, General Board of Discipleship. There were five active bishops on the General Board of Discipleship. And now that it goes to two active bishops, one from the Central Conference, one from the U.S., and since I'm not one of those five active bishops, that's at least basically 6 days that's been returned to me that I can do witness and work here in Iowa and provide leadership as we face the adaptive challenge of vital congregations.
Sure. Let's revisit one other item. I appreciate your extra time here. One of the more emotional conversations on the floor of General Conference had to do with human sexuality. It was an amendment substitute brought forward by Adam Hamilton and Mike Slaughter. It spoke about many minds. We're not all of one mind, that the church is divided in its opinion. And that came after a conversation about saying explicitly, we love one another as Christ has loved us. The Hamilton-Slaughter substitute was debated, ultimately not approved. There are some raw feelings as we come out of General Conference, particularly by folk who are of the LGBT community. Where do we go in the life of the church? Where do we go in the life of the annual conference?
I think we go forward recognizing that we are divided in spite of the fact that the resolution to acknowledge that in our book of discipline did not pass. We are divided on that particular issue. There were people who left who were hurt. Some probably people left with a sense that we have retained what currently is in the discipline and that that is sufficient for our witness, and others who feel much more at a personal level that this is an affront and an attack against them as persons who happen to be part of the LGBT community. I think that our witness of what it means to be a church that's committed to holy conferencing, to holy conversations, to listening to stories, and to being impacted by everybody's individual story is still before us. That opportunity is still before us. That opportunity is before us as an Iowa annual conference. What does it mean for us to be welcoming to all people, non-judgmental, given what happened at General Conference? I'm looking forward to the day in which we are willingly engage in the kinds of conversation that can lead to us living in community that exemplifies the love of Jesus Christ. So I understand the disappointment and hurt. I don't think it can be easily dismissed by biblical platitudes or cliches. For some, it may take time. For some, it may have been a straw that broke the camel's back, and we may lose some people from the church. And make space for people to listen and learn from one another. We can help maybe model for the church what a church can be like if we don't all agree on everything, and yet we are committed to the essentials as followers of John Wesley. So I'm looking forward to our Iowa annual conference. I was inspired by the representation we had at General Conference, the leadership of Brian Milford and Phil Carver and Jessica Ireland, who was able to speak to the whole body after having survived a car accident the day before, and to give witness to the General Conference on what it means for us really to reach out on behalf of others. As she thanked people for supporting her in her time at the hospital, she took time to speak up on behalf of one of the African delegates who had been waiting in the emergency room for hours and hours and had not been served. So for me, that was an example of the Iowa delegation and the folks from Iowa really living out what it means for us to be Christian community.
Your favorite phrase is be encouraged. We've come through General Conference. We're back. We face in a couple of weeks the Iowa Annual Conference. Mm-hmm. Based on the 2 weeks in Tampa and the chapters that it begins to unfold for the next quadrennium, what would your words of be encouraged be?
Well, I've often said, Art, that the church is of God. And so God has proven time and time again that God can take an imperfect community and do incredibly miraculous things through that community. And I think we're poised as an annual conference for God to take the imperfect United Methodist Church, the imperfect community that we call the Iowa Annual Conference, and do incredible work and incredible ministry. So I would say, yes, we have every reason to be encouraged, and we have to be encouraged in the ways in which we communicate. And so I'm grateful to you for the ways in which we are intentional about trying to communicate with people in a variety of different ways, that our calling to make disciples is not just about bringing people into the church, but for us to really wrestle with what it means for us to be the church, the incarnational sign of God in the world. And so I'm encouraged. And the reason I'm encouraged is because I consistently experience in relationships what the character of God is like, and that character is love.